Chapter 10.
I need a broom,
Lulu says.
A broom? Herring laughs. Spring cleaning?
Of a sort,
Lulu says.
Go check the cabins.
Fuck you. You're not my boss.
Check the cabins, Kimball says. Herring's lips form a frown, but he does as he's been told.
Kimball says, any idea how long ago they left?
Not long,
Lulu replies.
But I'd say McHugh's right.
Right?
They knew enough not to take the trail you were on or go toward the town on the reserve or risk the lake. They must have known the deep woods were their only option. I don't know how they'd have known that unless, as McHugh said, someone tipped them off.
Kimball eyes the cabin where Herring has just appeared, returning with a broom. Herring holds it out to Lulu and says,
I ain't doing your cleaning for you.
Kimball says, you make any calls on your sat phone on your way here?
No. Why?
Give it to me. Each of the men carries an Iridium 9575, no larger than a cell phone. Herring pulls his from the inside pocket of his camo jacket and hands it to Kimball, who punches in some numbers, then hands it back.
Let me see yours,
he says to McHugh.
Hell, I was with you the whole time.
Kimball holds out his hand, and McHugh reluctantly delivers his sat phone. After Kimball has checked it, he turns to Lulu. When he's checked all their phones, Kimball shakes his head.
Maybe somebody spotted us. Doesn't matter now. We just need to make sure they don't get away.
Into the meadow,
Lulu says.
All of you.
What for?
Herring snaps.
Spring cleaning,
Lulu says.
Come on.
Kimball leads the way, leaving Lulu alone on the bared ground between the cabins. Lulu slips the strap of his Weatherby over his shoulder and begins where the first of the men's prints appear, carefully sweeping the area clean of tracks, which includes those left by the three people who fled. He makes his way to the edge of the meadow grass and joins the others standing there. He tosses the broom far out into the tall, wild stalks, where it settles out of sight.
What good will that do?
McHugh says.
Hell, they can see you've swept it clean.
But they can't see anything else, like how many of us there are. And maybe it'll confuse them for a while, give us time to do what we're here for.
Kimball says, McHugh, you're going back the way we came, then return to town.
What for?
You need to move our vehicle. I don't want it anywhere near here.
I thought we hit it pretty good.
I don't want to take any chances. I want it gone. Go back to town.
He looks to Herring.
You hid the ATV you came on?
The man nods.
Nobody will find it. So what do I do?
McHugh says, clearly disgusted.
Just wait around while you have all the fun?
Get back to Frederick's. Have him monitor all local communications. If anyone comes looking for these people, we'll need to know, especially if the hayseed authorities around here get pulled into this. Keep us apprised of their movements and anything else we need to know. If things go south, we may need you as backup. Understood? McHugh nods, but it's clear he's not happy being left out.
Go on. Double time it, Kimball orders.
McHugh turns and lopes toward the path that leads through the woods to the road 2 miles away.
I need to take care of the kayak,
Lulu says.
Then we'll get started.
He makes a wide circle of the cabin, staying in the tall grass. On the shoreline, he draws the knife from the sheath on his belt and makes a long cut in the polypropylene hull in order to deflate the craft quickly. He rolls up the flattened kayak and hides it in the paddle among a clump of sumac. Then he returns to where the others are waiting. The sun is set, but the treetops still burn orange with the last of the light. The men stand facing north, the deep woods there. Lulu smiles at what's ahead. For him, it's a test, the kind he's good at, the kind he's been hired for.
Well, Kimball says. Lead the way.
Wait here. I'll call you when I find what I'm looking for.
Hell, I'm tired of waiting,
Herring says. You'll wait, Kimball says, and nods for Lulu to proceed.
He makes his way across the meadow. The trail is faint, a broken or crushed stalk here and there, nothing more. They've been careful, his prey. When he reaches the tree line, he sees a clear trail, the prints of a small moccasin among the soft dirt and needles beneath the pines. He follows the trail to a place where other prints converge. One is from a pair of moccasins and the other from a pair of small boots. He steps to the edge of the meadow and signals for Kimball and Herring. Just as they've rendezvoused in the pines, Lulu spots a stranger entering the meadow from the trail McHugh took. They hide themselves and watch as the man crosses the meadow and checks the cabins. Herring has his rifle snugged against his shoulder, his sights on the man.
I cannot see him.
Lower your weapon, Kimball says.
Why didn't McHugh take care of him?
Herring sounds disgusted.
Because, unlike you, McHugh understands that until we have the woman, the more quietly we go about this, the better. If he's smart, he kept out of sight and let the man pass.
We need to move before he spots us,
Lulu says.
He turns and leads the way deeper into the woods, moving in the direction of the few tracks left by the three who fled.
If he were tracking alone, he'd be careful of the trail he himself leaves. But he's with two men who know nothing and who leave a trail an idiot could follow. It won't matter. He'll find the people he's been hired to find, and Kimball will deal with this business, whatever it is, before anyone has a chance to catch up to them. In and out of the woods in a few hours, he believes. The looming dark doesn't concern him. He's tracked before by artificial light and by torchlight. He even relishes the additional challenge. Within 15 minutes, he's lost the trail. It's been heading almost due north, then it vanishes. He turns around to backtrack. What is it?
Kimball says.
They've shifted direction somewhere behind us.
And you didn't see it?
Herring says, grinning with obvious pleasure. Lulu doesn't respond, just turns around. 50 yards back, he finds his mistake, or rather, the clever misdirection. He understands that his prey doubled back and changed their route. They knew, or at least suspected, that even in the deep woods, they would be followed. He moves west where their trail leads him, trying to be more cautious as the twilight deepens and the woods grow dark. His prey changed direction several times. Eventually, Lulu must rely on the flashlight clipped to his belt to follow the trail. It's a Lingsfire tactical, small and powerful, with the option of a red beam. In the dark, the red helps him see the contours of ground prints more easily. He understands now that it won't be a quick in-and-out operation. In all likelihood, they'll have to spend the night in the woods. Any idea where they're going?
Kimball asks.
They've wandered a bit, but basically they're headed north, into the boundary waters.
Not toward the reservation or Aurora?
Not yet, but sooner or later they will. Once I get a sense of which option they've chosen, we'll move to cut them off.
You're saying we won't catch up with them anytime soon?
Lulu can hear the censure in Kimball's voice.
We'll keep moving,
Lulu says.
If they stop for the night, we'll find them.
They'll see your light coming long before we reach them.
Maybe so. But if they use a light to keep going, we'll spot them too. My guess is that they'll hole up somewhere. That's when we get them.
Kimball makes a noise in his throat. Agreement? Disgruntlement? Whatever, it's clear he's not happy, which doesn't bother Lulu much. For him, this isn't about pleasing the man who's hired him. This is becoming about something far more important. He hides his smile from Kimball.
They come at last to an area at least 100 yards wide and composed of several small hillocks of exposed and broken rock. Lulu starts across, moving carefully because it would be easy to turn an ankle. The other two men follow. They've brought out flashlights as well, bright white beams. Lulu spends half an hour trying to pick up the trail again, but even as he searches, he knows it's useless. The vast, moonless dark that has descended and the expanse of rock have conspired to hide the trail of his prey. He will have to wait until morning. But patience is something he's good at.
"What now?" Kimball asks, his disappointment obvious.
"We rest for the night."
"We'll be in this damn forest all night," Herring says. "It's already getting cold."
"Build a fire," Lulu says.
"You crazy? They'll know we're here."
"If they're close enough to see your fire, they're close enough to have seen our flashlights. They know we're here."
"And they can hit us if they want."
"Their prints have told me that there are probably 2 women and 1 man. Are you afraid of a couple of women?"
"We'll rest here," Kimball says, "but we'll post watches. Go ahead, Herring, build your fire. Maybe it'll even draw them to us."
"Moths to the flame," Herring says. "If so, we'll burn them."
Kimball nods once, then adds as a reminder, "But not the Morisseau woman." Lulu settles down for the night. He knows there will be no moths coming to this flame. Out there in the dark is someone who understands these woods, for whom this vast wilderness is home, who believes this place offers sanctuary. Whoever that person is, in the morning Lulu will find him, or her. In the comfort of this knowledge, he quickly yields to sleep.